Welcome to room 4216. I'm so glad you've come.
Hi, Cecilia. Cecilia. Cecilia!
What am I reading?
Wakey, wakey.
Sorry.
Not get much sleep last night or something?
No. I am not a morning person. You know I'm not.
Well, that's true. You are not a night owl. You're a night person, period.
Not quite that bad.
Well, we are in room 4216, and we have some things we'd like to share with people, so...
You're right.
Can you pull it together and...
I can pull it together.
Are you sure?
See, I'm pulling it together.
Are you sure you're sure?
I'm positive I'm sure.
Okay.
Let's see. Pastor Dave wanted me to read this passage. 1 Timothy 6, 8, and 9. That's right. Paul is speaking to Timothy here. If we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Yeah, right. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap. Uh-oh. And into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. Interesting.
Sounds like you didn't really like that Bible verse a whole lot, Cecilia.
Why do you always give me the things to read that prick my conscience?
What pricked your conscience on that one?
Well, Paul is talking about being content with everything we have.
Mm-hmm.
And that if we're not content, then we're falling into desires and traps, and that leads to ruin and destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And... I just don't... I mean, there are times when I need things. And Paul... Sometimes I feel like he just doesn't understand.
The question is, do you need them or want them?
Well, I admit that there are times when I want things. But what's so wrong... about wanting things.
Well, that's an there's a fine line here, and that's why Paul said, if you have food and clothing, be content with this. We're going to be talking today about the last commandment, about coveting, and that it has to deal with this whole thing of being content with what you have or wanting more. And where's that line where it's okay to desire something but not okay because it's coveting. So let's take a look at that, and why don't we start by reading the commandment itself first.
You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his manservant, or his maidservant, his ox, or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor.
The church, long before Martin Luther, I think it was around the year 1200 or so, had done a very interesting thing. Because there was so much need in talking about coveting, they actually took this last commandment and broke it into two commandments. And you might remember the second commandment about the graven images, they just kind of slid that one into the first commandment, no other gods. And so some of the churches have slightly different numberings for the commandments. My point being, let's first listen to what Martin Luther put down for what he called the ninth commandment in regards to coveting.
You got to say the magic phrase, Pastor Dave.
What does this mean?
We should fear and love God so that we do not scheme to get our neighbor's inheritance or house, or get it in a way which only appears right, but help him and be of service to him in keeping it.
And now we move to what Luther called the tenth commandment. What does this mean?
We should fear and love God so that we do not entice or force away our neighbor's wife, workers, or animals, or turn them against him, but urge them to stay and do their duty.
So the basic thrust or point of this commandment is that coveting is that sinful desire to have something that isn't yours.
But can't I want things?
Yeah, you can. There's a fine line there between coveting, desiring, wanting. Sometimes we use the word envy. They all might be the same. I'm not sure on the etymology of all those words. You have another verse there, I think, Cecilia. I had picked out Matthew 15, I think it is.
Matthew,
if you could read
15,
that.
Matthew 15, 19. Out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, and slander. What does this have to do with coveting? The only thing I can see in here that might have something to do with coveting is theft.
Well, actually, coveting is the heart. The whole point is it comes from the heart, and from the heart flows sins. And if you remember in the meaning of the commandment, it talked about scheming or... what was the other word in the 10th commandment meaning?
Enticing.
Enticing. Yeah, it's plotting, it's planning ways to get things. And so it does have to deal with thievery, but it could also deal with... As talked about a neighbor's wife, so it could be adultery. It spills into all of the commandments, actually, because it is in the heart that desires something which properly should not be yours.
And now we take you back into time to a place where we have the two countries of Judah and Israel after King David, once they were divided. We take you to Samaria, where Ahab and Jezebel reign as king and queen.
Ahab, what is wrong with you?
You remember me telling you about that sweet little vineyard right next to the palace, and how I thought about making it into my vegetable garden, and I found out it's owned by Nahab.
And Naboth.
That's who it is. And so I went and talked with him and said, hey, I'll pay you for it. Or, hey, I'll give you a different piece of land. And he said no.
Is this how you act as king over Israel? Get up and eat. Cheer up. I'll get you the vineyard of Naboth.
Okay.
And so the queen goes into her private room and starts writing a letter under the name of King Ahab.
Proclaim a day of feasting and seat Naboth in a prominent place among the people. But seat two scoundrels opposite him and have them testify that he has cursed both God and the king. Then take him out and stone him to death.
After writing the letter and putting the king's seal, she sent it to the elders, and they carried through with this plan as it was written. Word came back to the queen that all had been accomplished. Naboth had been stoned.
Ahab.
Yeah.
Get up.
Why?
And take possession of the vineyard of Naboth.
Oh?
He has been stoned to death.
Oh!
He is no longer alive.
Really?
But dead.
Such a tragedy. I guess as king now I can just take it. Okay, thank you.
So Jezebel's writing letters to the elders and nobles, and there's a feast. But I suspect that the elders and nobles weren't the only ones at the feast. There were probably many others there.
Probably.
And when the scoundrels came out with their accusations, the people, the average person, thought that taking Naboth out to stone him was right. But it only appeared right.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that this commandment is trying to focus in on. The heart moves, and it could even move to actions that appear right. But if it's the desire to get what isn't yours, and that's really the ultimate thing with this commandment, and get it in a wrongful way. Now, you had asked earlier also, then what's the difference? You know, if let's say you decided you needed, what do you need from Amazon, Cecilia?
I need a new keyboard. Okay. A new music keyboard.
New music keyboard. And you look and you finally saved up the money and you buy it?
Mm-hmm.
You desired it? You waited? You
yes.
planned for it? You got it. That's fine. But I have a keyboard. I don't know if it's
yes,
what
you do,
want.
And I've played around with it.
Yeah. Some of our music interludes are done with that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you would somehow plot and scheme and whimper and cry and yours is broke and yours, that mine's just sitting there, can't I have it for a while or whatever, and you plot and schemed and got it away from me. That's where the difference is.
Uh-huh.
Is the heart moves to get what's not yours in a wrongful way. It's a rightful way to purchase it. It's a wrongful way to steal it. Whether it be a keyboard or as it can be with other commandments, reputations, wives, husbands. And so that's where this commandment really ultimately goes to is, excuse the pun, the heart of the matter.
Thank you.
It's one thing to say, don't covet, and we're not to, but there's a positive side. The Lord directs us on how our attitude should be. And one of the verses that speak about this is Psalm 37, if you'd read that, Cecilia.
Yeah, Psalm 37:4. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your hearts.
So if we focus on the Lord first and primarily, then our heart follows. What?
I'm just not sure.
About what?
Well, I love the Lord, and I want to serve him.
Yeah.
But I don't have the desires of my heart.
You don't have the desires of your heart?
Not all of them. Not some of the ones I want most.
Well, I guess then you're left with the question, are you delighting in the Lord enough, or is your heart wrong?
So it's always my fault.
Let's look at another verse. Maybe this will help bring it out a little bit, maybe. I think it's Psalm 119. It's a beautiful psalm. This, again, is in the positive side.
Verses 35 and 36, is that the ones you wanted?
Yeah, that's the one.
Direct me in the path of your commands, for there I find delight. Turn my heart toward your statutes and not toward selfish gain.
What the writer here is trying to help us focus in on is our heart should always be for the Lord. Our eyes fixed on God and the things he has for us and the things he wants for the world. It's when our eyes focus on this and that and the things of this world that we get tangled up and we think our desire is the Lord, but really our desires are for the things of the world. And that's why Paul speaks in such ways to help us to understand. Now I'm getting tangled up in my words. To help us be focused in on the Lord rather than the things of the world.
You mean when Paul says in Philippians, I know what it is to be content.
Yeah. I've had plenty and I've had in need and I'm content in Christ.
It's not always easy to be.
Well, no. No. And we didn't sign up for Christianity to make it easy. In fact, we're always fighting that nature inside us. That sinful nature. The nature that always wants...
That says, I want.
Go back to Psalm 119 again. Reread that.
Direct me in the path of your commands, for there I find delight. Turn my heart toward your statutes, and not towards selfish gain.
So the writer is saying, look to the Lord, always to the Lord, and that will change our hearts. When our hearts are always desiring earthly things, we're really not thinking about godly things. Well, this is a good break point, Cecilia. I think maybe it would be a good time to break for lunch.
Oh, good. Yeah. I love your lunches.
I was going to grill some chicken. I like grilling, and as you know. And then also, have you ever eaten sautéed squash and sautéed zucchini?
I don't know.
I don't think I like zucchini very much.
But, I mean,
I see you're hesitating. I'm guessing you don't like it?
I'll eat it, of course. But, no, I mean, I've never had sautéed squash, but zucchini is definitely not my favorite. And squash, I I really don't like either, but I'm trying to be content inside, like you just said.
You know, that's interesting. Content. Now, it's really, that type of contentment isn't exactly on track with coveting, but it is, in a way.
Well, it's wanting
something else.
Something, I mean.
And that's an interesting thing. My mom always taught me when I go to someone else's house and they serve a meal, you smile and eat it.
That's right.
And I remember going overseas, and there were several times I just smiled and ate it, and did not like it. But you do it as an honorable thing to the people who are serving it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, really, does that not fit with us and God? Does he not serve us with things, with time, activities, and he sets it forth us almost like a smorgasbord of life?
Not all of us.
And
not
when
those of us that have disabilities, he
and
doesn't always.
When we don't like it, we complain to God. We covet other things. Isn't that the same as when you're visiting a friend and saying, no, I don't like that. I don't want that. What else do you got? I want to eat something else. And you're being rude to the host. In some ways, being content is being polite to the host, who is God. We're not God. But the Father is.
Yeah. I'd like to play a bit of a drama here. There is a series by C.S. Lewis called The Chronicles of Narnia. And in book 3 of the 7, The Horse and His Boy, there is a queen. And she is in negotiations with the king of another land to marry his son. Well, the queen departs. And here is what happens next.
Now the whole day's been wasted, and they are gone, gone, gone!
Compose yourself, O my son, for the departure of guests makes a wound that is easily healed in the heart of a judicious host.
But I want her! I must have her! I shall die if I do not get her! False, proud, black-hearted daughter of a dog that she is! I must have the barbarian queen,
Or what, my son?
I desire and propose, O my father, that you immediately call out your invincible armies and invade the thrice-accursed land of Narnia and waste it with fire and sword, killing the High King and all of his blood, except the Queen Susan, for I must have her as my wife.
You know, if God would give everyone the desires of their heart, someone would be bound to be disappointed. Whose dream should God choose?
The dreams clash.
Well, I know that I've learned a lot from this study, but what have you learned?
Please write us, and you can do so at
info,
I-N-F-O,
at not-alone.net.
And remember,
we are not alone.
Do come back again to room 4216.
Credits. Interlude musicians, Terry Nord and Robert Vaughn, and Focus on the Family Radio Theater, The Chronicles of Narnia, Book 3, The Horse and His Boy by C.S. Lewis.